It is Ben Friend Fridays with Ben Fredrickson of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. There really are two topics we're going to get into. The big one concerning college athletics, and that is the University of Missouri. And the hammer came down from the NCAA. We'll talk it over with Ben Fredrickson. Topic number two, the Super Bowl, but who really cares, right? Some do, some don't, but we're going to get into Stan Kroenke and Kevin Demoff. All that coming up with Ben Fredrickson, and I think you're really going to enjoy that conversation. This is presented by the National Children's Cancer Society, Hotshot Sports Bar and Grill, Hair Saloon for Men, Design Air Heating and Cooling, Ryan Kelly, the Home Loan Expert, and by Schnucks. We're coming to you from the Lou Fuse Automotive Studios on ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. I hope you look at the website and take a look at what happened last Saturday. We had our National Children's Cancer Society event, and our guests were Cardinals Hall of Famers Jim Edmonds and Chris Carpenter. We had John Mozeliak as well. Just thousands of dollars raised for kids with cancer and also their families. And if you'd like to also see more on the event and the pictures, part of the fundraiser, go to ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. Also, you can go to thenccs.org, thenccs.org. That event has raised now close to $2 million. And really, really just a special, special night. So you can find out more at their website, my website. But right now we're going to talk about Mizzou and get into what was the St. Louis Rams with Ben Fredrickson of the Post-Dispatch.
Hi, my name is Ryan Kelly with thehomeloanexpert.com. I was born and raised in St. Louis. My team and I pour our hearts and soul into this community. Our job is to offer the best mortgage loans for this town. We are here to support anything that's good for St. Louis, and that's why our team firmly stands behind MLS for the Lou. Enjoy the podcast.
I'm pretty sure I don't need to remind you that you're going to need the right food, drinks, and snacks for the big game. I do want to suggest going to Schnucks for all your Sunday game day essentials. They have everything to make your party great, all in one stop. Have you seen their big bucket of wings yet? How about their brand new Schnucks chips and salty snacks? Take a look at the Schnucks party guide called Simply Entertaining. And when you're stocking up as a Schnucks Rewards member, you're always earning points. Stocking up for the big party means heading to Schnucks. It's a Friday, and that means it's a chance to visit with Ben Fredrickson of the Post-Dispatch and a contributor to KTRS Radio. We do this every Friday, and we have the chance to go one-on-one with Ben Fredrickson. Does a great job on the website and certainly with the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Ben, obviously, your article this morning in the Post-Dispatch covered it. Mizzou slapped hard by the NCAA. Break down what has transpired for people that are tuning into this. Why has the NCAA come down so hard on Mizzou?
Well, the NCAA is going to tell you that there's few things it takes more seriously than academic fraud and academic dishonesty. And I think a lot of people agree with that standing, that the thing that Missouri is going to fight here and the thing that kind of, you know, makes common sense look a little wacky, as the NCAA often does, is how they define academic dishonesty, how they attack it. A lot of comparisons are going to be drawn to the North Carolina case, which basically proved that North Carolina was operating sham classes that were largely populated by student athletes, and they basically skated. This is at Mizzou, doesn't seem to be, when you run it through the common sense test, as big of a problem, but Mizzou's getting pretty much hammered for it. What happened at Mizzou was there was a tutor named Yolanda Kumar who was working with student athletes, and she came forward and said that she had been basically cheating on behalf of some student athletes. There are a total of 12 student athletes that she had completed work for, done online tests for, taken an advanced placement test for two of them, and also done some online classes through other universities that I think were being counted by Mizzou. And this is something that when it was alerted, Mizzou brought it forward, you know, self-reported, took it to the SEC, took it to the NCAA, launched an internal investigation, sat the players who were involved and still participating in sports, and really felt like they had cooperated within the full extent of what the NCAA had asked Mizzou to do. They knew they were going to get punished. They were under probation still from the Frank Haith era that is remembered so fondly in Columbia. They were also, you know, understood that, you know, when you have a tutor like this who is helping athletes with, beyond helping athletes with coursework, that you're going to have to get some sort of punishment. I think they were expecting probation. They were expecting to lose wins for lose, you know, vacate some wins on some of the teams those guys had, guys and girls had played on. But they weren't expecting this. And what they got was a slew of penalties, from probation to postseason bans for the baseball, softball, and football teams for the upcoming seasons. They received recruiting restrictions, even in football, which is unheard of to see recruiting punishments for an academic investigation. Also financial fines on top of vacated wins. I mean, this is just a full plethora of punishments, and it truly caught Mizzou blindsided. Jim Sterk and is traveling today. If he would have known this was coming, I got to think he would have been in Columbia, you know, at home base there. The appeal was in the works by sundown on Thursday. And, you know, the tone has clearly shifted in Columbia. It was, we're cooperating. We feel like we have good communication with the NCAA to look, this is the NCAA overreaching. There is a clear frustration that Mizzou sees this punishment and has seen other schools that didn't get hardly anything for similar cases. And there's frustration that Mizzou felt like it cooperated when some of these schools, like North Carolina, have fought tooth and nail to defend what is clearly wrong and came out looking much better. So the big question that's being asked nationally, and I think it's a fair one, Dan, is what benefit does a school get from cooperating? They're told to cooperate. They're told to, you know, make things better for themselves by coming clean. It's kind of the thing that you might give a kid is, hey, tell me what happened before I find out myself, and it's going to be worse. Well, if you ask that kid that question, then you ground that kid for life, then eventually the kid's going to start lying, and the kid's not going to start coming clean. I think that's where Mizzou feels like it is now. Not that it would lie to the NCAA, but people are asking what benefit is there for cooperating.
Absolutely. What was your take on it, though? I mean, what do you think as you heard about it, and then you heard those involved with it? They held a phone or press conference, if you will, yesterday, and you had a chance to kind of digest this and review some of the other ones. Most notable was, as you mentioned, North Carolina. What was your take on it?
Well, my take is that it seems heavy-handed, and I think it was too far-reaching, and I wonder if it's far-reaching with the idea that Mizzou would appeal and have it lessened. You know, to me, the recruiting restrictions make no sense. I don't know why a school should be punished in recruiting for academic choices of a tutor and student athletes who are gone. You hate to see the postseason ban because, you know, it was something that these current student athletes had nothing to do with. So now Kelly Bryant could potentially not be able to play in a bowl game because of players that he never knew the names of deciding to let an academic tutor help them cheat. The biggest thing, too, is kind of the claim that was not proven. So this tutor claimed that she was pressured by her superiors into helping athletes cheat. And if that was true, then drop the hammer. Because if you're going to have student athletes, the whole word is a farce if you're, you know, systemically helping them through school without doing their work. You know, that claim that Yolanda Kumar made, that her superiors told her to cheat to help guys and girls get through school, it was not proven. And you got to believe the NCAA would have included that if it was able to find it. So it seems like they're being punished for, you know, a claim that was not substantiated in the report. And that was my first opinion, is I don't see any way that this is a deserving punishment based off of the facts that were presented in the NCAA's, you know, ruling. I also think that Mizzou has every right and reason to appeal, and I think it should fight it hard. And I think the message to other programs is that you can't expect a lessened sentence from the NCAA if you cooperate, and it might make some schools think how they handle these things moving forward. I don't know that the best case is to always run and tell the NCAA everything you did. And I feel almost dirty saying that, but the precedent is there. And if you lawyer up and you fight and you defend your stance, that almost seems to have a better approach than trying to work with the NCAA to help your case.
You mentioned Kelly Bryant. So with this, Ben, for our listeners, seniors now next year would have a chance to, if they wanted to, seniors for next season in any sport that's been involved with this type of ban, if they wanted to, they could transfer with no penalty, correct?
That is correct, yeah. And that's a good rule, and that should be pointed out. I mean, if you're at a school and it gets hit with something that you had nothing to do with and you have 1 year of eligibility left and they tell you that your postseason, you know, is not going to be possible for you, then you should be allowed to transfer out without penalty. So immediately people were asking about Kelly Bryant. He did tell Dave Matter, or his coach, his personal quarterback coach, told Dave Matter that he will be staying with Mizzou. So Mizzou doesn't have to worry about that as of right now, of Kelly Bryant leaving, because he won't be able to play in a bowl game. Mizzou is hoping that it wins this appeal and gets those postseason bans lifted. So that's something that it hopes to get answered. I don't know if it will have that answer by the time that rolls around. These things take a very long time, months even before they can even go before a committee, and then it can be more months before that, before a decision is made. So like baseball and softball, for example, like baseball starts season very soon, and you're going to maybe not have an answer by the time that rolls around. So as for now, the biggest question was Kelly Bryant. He is going to stick at Mizzou per the people close to him. And but there are other seniors, there are other graduate transfers on the team who could end up leaving if they chose to do so.
Yeah, and you know, they're really in a tough spot too, because you appeal, you don't know when that announcement would come down. I know Mizzou feels that they're going to be able to get this overturned, but as a, you know, graduate transfer senior, you're left in limbo, aren't you?
Well, yeah, you just have to kind of hope it all works out. And I mean, Kelly Bryant is, you know, his goal, I think, is to prove that he can play in the NFL. If he can do that in a regular SEC season without a bowl game. And I know that, you know, I've heard from folks who said, look, Mizzou was never going to play for the national championship anyway. Well, probably yes. And I don't think anybody was projecting them that high next season, but you're also talking about young men who that's their goal. That's their dream. So to know that you're not going to be able to play for a college football playoff before your season even starts, in some ways, it's a bit of a buzzkill. I mean, that's kind of the dream of every college football team when that season starts. You never know what might happen. Well, if you have a postseason ban, you know. So I think that was that takes a little bit of excitement out of the season, unless there's some sort of movement on an appeal. I know that Barry Odom is going to be incredibly mad about the recruiting restrictions, everything from limited visits to, you know, fewer scholarship seek and fill, and even some of the, you know, even the budgetary restriction, they're going to take, you know, 1% of the money made by the affected teams. I mean, the penalties were both wide ranging and pretty damning in terms of their reach, and also in terms of their ability to impact the future. The recruiting restrictions hurt. I mean, coaches will tell you that there are about two things they hate the most. And oddly enough, one is vacated wins. When they're their wins, they truly hate that. Their coaches are about the only people who care about wins coming off of a record. The fans don't seem to even pay attention to that. But coaches care about that. They also really care about the recruiting, because that's one of those things that it really affects their success. And it's one of the things that I think fans forget about. You don't have fans who remember when a team goes 6-6, oh, remember those recruiting visits that he couldn't go on. But, you know, that might be a difference in a game at some point, and coaches do remember those.
There's no doubt. You kind of touched upon this, and I'm curious what you think. The kids, you know, some of these kids are long gone, and yet it's the kids now that are being punished. Where do you stand on that? I'm just curious what you think and what the general consensus is. You've covered college sports for a long time. So you got kids from years ago. They're the ones that were the violators, and yet they're long gone. Some of them playing pro sports. Some of them moved on in their lives, and yet these are the kids now that are being affected by it. And maybe some of these coaches that were there before knew about it, and they go on to different jobs and are making the money and cashing the checks and move on without penalty. Where do you stand on that?
Well, it's tough, and it's not ideal, but you also – and I hate to say this, but in fairness to the NCAA, you have to do something. You have to come up with a way to, you know, if the NCAA is going to exist, it has to care about punishing academic transgressions. And, you know, it seems to prioritize those over some other things that are pretty bad. But I think we can all agree that if we're going to have college sports, then the kids should be going to college. I mean, if it is really the one thing that keeps the NCAA from being a professional league, and it's a professional league way more than the NCAA likes to admit, but the one thing that's kind of giving it some sort of appeal as actually being collegiate sports is that college is kind of supposed to matter. So they should care about defending that. The best punishments are probably not ones that affect guys who have nothing to do with it. And it is fascinating that, you know, this is the only person who was on Mizzou's campus at the time this tutor started cheating for players and helping players cheat was Barry Odom, and he was the defensive coordinator. So the baseball coach, the softball coach, the football coach were not in their current roles. Jim Sterk, the athletics director, who will have to try to fight this fight, he was at San Diego State. So thanks Mac Rhodes, I guess, is one thing we should be mentioning here. And also thanks to Frank Haith, because it was his program that put Mizzou on the probation that absolutely meant a stiffer penalty when this came out. I haven't seen that get mentioned very much, but there was a reason. One of the reasons Mizzou got hammered was because it was already, you know, kind of still under the black cloud of the Frank Haith mistake. So that's worth mentioning too. I do think there's got to be a way to figure out punishments that don't affect guys who are currently playing, whether it's, and I know the vacated ones don't mean that much, whether it's financial, whether it's, I think personally that punishment should be more likely to follow the coaches as they go. I would like to see coaches who
that's what I'm saying, yeah,
in ways,
yeah,
go with them as opposed to punishing the program as they leave.
Luke Hughes, we are St. Louis.
This is Dan McLaughlin, and I'm proud to be the first member of Fuse Select. It's a new, first-of-its-kind program ever to hit St. Louis through the Lou Fuse Automotive Network. So what exactly is Fuse Select? Here you go. It's a monthly car subscription that's an alternative to leasing or owning a vehicle. Just download the Fuse Select app. You could be driving an SUV for family trips. Maybe it's a fun sports car for date nights. A luxury sedan for a daily commute. And with your subscription, insurance, maintenance, cleaning is all included. My favorite part of the program, unlimited flips. The Fuse Select concierge team delivers the vehicle of your choice right to your doorstep. Unlimited flips. It's incredible. Fuse Select. Learn more. Sign up at Fuse.com. Fuse Select, like owning a multi-car garage.
Lou Fuse, we are St. Louis.
I'm proud to announce a new sponsor for Scoops with DannyMac.com, and that's Design Air Heating and Cooling. You know, a few weeks ago, I was having an issue with my furnace, and I made a connection with Seth Goldkamp, who runs Design Air Heating and Cooling. He sent a technician over to my house. Not only did the technician arrive at my house, but so did Seth. They did a tune-up on my furnace. They got it running properly, but they also found a glitch in the system that is now saving me money on my monthly statement. That's all because of Design Air Heating and Cooling. They did that for me and my family. They can do that for you. They're a fourth-generation family-run company. They've been in business for over 100 years because they take care of their customers. The number one train dealer in the Midwest. It's hard to stop a train. Find out more at designairservice.com. Thanks to Seth Goldkamp and Design Air Heating and Cooling. All right, let's switch gears. Super Bowl weekend. Ben Fredrickson, we're involved in sports. We make a living out of this. However, it is unique to say the least. Are you going to be watching?
Here's my status. I'm going to my niece's birthday party on Saturday in Kansas City. I'll be driving back on Sunday. And I have an invitation to go to my best friend, my best man's Super Bowl party. And last I heard, he sent me a text that I don't know if I'm having it. My TV's on the fritz. And I said, even better, I'll come over anyway. So I don't know if he's got it back going on. I guess I could be in a room where it's being played, but I will not be, you know, watching it dialed in on the game. I might go see some friends, but I just don't have an appetite for it. I don't necessarily have the stomach for it. The commercials, maybe, I don't know. I mean, I'm very much inclined that I'm going to find something better to do, even if it's just chatting with friends in another room. I don't pretend that it's going to make a big difference. I don't think we're putting a dent in the shield by not watching. I just think that, you know, for me, as I've said to you before, it's harder and harder for me to watch, not thinking of all the things that we know to be true. It's kind of like, in some ways, I've compared it to like watching pro wrestling. Like when you find out it's fake as a kid, it kind of ruins it a little bit. For at least it did for me. And when you find out, I don't think football's fake, although some in New Orleans might disagree or rigged. I just think that it's hard for me to watch it without knowing what goes on behind the scenes, and it's kind of ruined it for me a little bit. So I've not watched one full game all year, and I haven't missed it, man. I have more time on Sundays. I saw some clips. I see some highlights. You can't obviously get on Twitter without seeing the best plays, but I've not sat down and watched a full game all year, and I don't think I'll start Sunday.
Hair Saloon's home base, right here in St. Louis, founded in 1997, now with 16 locations here in the Gateway City. You'll receive a perfect haircut. Hair Saloon keeps client notes on each customer. I was just in there this past week, and they kept client notes on me. And, Ben, they gave me a great haircut. I got to tell you, I'm very pleased with the haircut I have right now. I'm ready for spring training. And on each visit, you'll be assured that they know what you want. They'll do that in the privacy of your own cutting station. Both my boys go in there. They get a Coca-Cola. They sit down. They're watching a little soccer. They get the complimentary beverage, relaxing shampoo, hot towel, and a mint, complimentary shoe shine, all that for only $22. And that is at Hair Saloon for Men. Hey, by the way, the Blues back in action this weekend. Kick off that stretch run, and you can join the party this Saturday for all Blues action at one of Hotshot's Sports Bar and Grill's 11 area locations. Score a hat trick of savings. Great food, drink specials available during every Blues game. Bud Family beer specials, $4. Jack Daniels cocktails, $5.99. Blues sampler appetizers, the $4 Blue Note Bombs, and the all-new Golden Breck cocktail for $5. And that is at Hotshot Sports Bar and Grill. I'm curious, if you had to put a percentage on it, and you're being honest, how many people do you think in the St. Louis market are watching the Super Bowl this weekend?
Well, there'll definitely be some folks who hate watch it and root against the Rams, if they can stomach pulling for the Patriots. There will be some folks who abstain. But, you know, there are a lot of people who still continue to, I think, root for the Rams and just focus on the players. And I'm not going to disparage anyone who has that that approach at all. Some of those guys, I thought, you know, Roger Saffold, for example, made a point to, you know, thank St. Louis fans after they clinched the Super Bowl appearance. I thought that was pretty cool of him to take the time to do that, of knowing that there are people still here who are supporting him personally. So I don't know if I guess maybe I'm fascinated to see the ratings, because everyone has said, I think they'll be down. They'll think they'll be down. I don't think they'll be down. I think they'll be pretty solid here for the St. Louis area. I would not even be surprised if they were higher here than they were in Los Angeles, which has been the case a few times this year.
Man, wouldn't that be something? Hear me out on this one. In a way, in a weird, odd way, it might be a blessing in disguise to have the Rams in the Super Bowl. And I say that because I just don't think the national media, or really the national football fan, or anybody outside this region has understood what truly took place in the deceit, the lies by Stan Kroenke and Kevin Demoff and the organization, and how it went down in leaving St. Louis. And my point is that because now they're the focal point of the sports world, a lot has been written about the Rams leaving St. Louis. And I think a lot has been unearthed and uncovered with that. Now, we all know that. And I thought your article at the beginning of the week was absolutely fabulous. And you talked about it, and I thought it was perfect. It's not that they left. That people are going to ask about that. Well, what is a reporter's going to ask about that? What is a St. Louis sports fan feel about the Rams? Well, they're upset. You know, that was their team, and they supported them, and with their emotions and with their wallet. But, you know, I think people knew that answer. But I think, to your point, correct me if I'm wrong, the point of your article was to expose what had happened, because you knew that many of your colleagues would pick up on that. With the internet, it's going to be picked up and carried, and other people would read it. But you were hoping that maybe, just maybe, then some of your colleagues would ask the question, why and how, what went down? And your article, I think, is jump-started that question and those questions again. Would you agree with that, my little diatribe there, and some of those questions now have come back up in front in full circle?
Well, it's very complimentary, so I will agree. If it wasn't, I would disagree, of course.
Yes, thank you.
No, I think that, I mean, we've talked about the Super Bowl, and I think we see this kind of the same way. Is like, I just wanted the folks who are coming here to kind of like, and then this is, I kid you not, like, this cracks me up. So I've seen, I think, last count, there are like five or six national stories about how St. Louis is dealing with the Rams being in the Super Bowl. The Los Angeles Times came to town. The Washington Post was here. Yahoo Sports dropped in and did something at some point. I think the Nation, which is like a national website, and I think there was another, maybe even reporter from overseas, one of the UK newspapers or magazines came into town, and also USA Today, if I didn't say that already. All these places came to St. Louis to talk about St. Louis being life after the Super Bowl, and they got a lot of the stuff you'd expect, people upset and the urinal cakes with Stan Kroenke's face on them at Hot Shots, which I may or may not be interested in buying for my bathroom.
Well, I don't know if you want to say that, because they are a fantastic sponsor on ScoopsWithDannyMac.com, but go ahead.
Maybe I can go in for free. Is that what you're saying?
I will get you one. If you want to use it, I will. And I should mention at Hot Shots, they do have the St. Louis Blues ticket Tuesdays at Hot Shots. But yes, go on.
Oh, this is turning into a commercial. I do have a Stan Kroenke billboard custom made that I will tweet out a picture of that. I really do. I think I'll tweet out a picture of that on Super Bowl Sunday. But I just wanted to try to drive the point home to anyone who would at least be open to hearing it, that there are, as Shrek would say, it's like an onion. There's layers here. And only one of the layers is that you're ticked off because your team left. There's multiple layers here to this. And I hope that point got across. I do think some of the guys who came here to report maybe saw a different truth than they expected to get coming in. And that's a good thing, is shine a light on it and expose these people for who they really are. And I'm appreciative of the journalists who came in and got a sense of that beyond the kind of the narrative that St. Louis lost a team because it didn't care.
Absolutely. I want to give folks a little preview maybe of your article tomorrow in the Post-Dispatch, because I think something that has happened here is that Stan Kroenke has been the focal point, because he's the owner of the Rams moving. Many of those articles have talked about just leaving for the money and greener pastures and the manner then in which the team did this. But there's another guy, and that's Kevin Dimoff. And that should not be overlooked, too. There's a lot of stuff that a lot of layers to this, and he's a big part of it as well. You were telling me that in Saturday's Post-Dispatch, there's some things that'll be uncovered with that as well. And maybe without giving away the article, you can dive into that just a little bit for a teaser for your readers at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch.
Well, I just, now that Kevin's back in the media again, he's kind of, sometimes he can be kind of hard to find, but he is very involved in the media here in St. Louis. And now all of a sudden his name's popping up all over the place again out in L.A. So I just think it's a good time. It'll be a good time on Saturday to kind of look back at some of his greatest hits. And, with politicians these days, we do the fact checks, where we, rate their public comments for different levels of truth. And sometimes Kevin needs a fact check or two or 15. So we're going to do that tomorrow and maybe get folks who aren't as familiar with Kevin. Just a little reminder that sometimes what he says kind of depends on what he wants to say in that moment. It might not exactly be all that true. So now that he's, talking to USA Today about relocation and kind of getting ready to get his primetime spot hovering above Stan Kroenke's shoulder during the big game, then we'll just do a little fact check or two.
What do you think the response will be to that, as the national media will then again pick up on your story?
I don't know. I think at that point they'll be so consumed with the Super Bowl that, I guess the worst thing is they call you whiny. But I do know this. When I write about, the way this went down, as we know it to be true, I get more response from readers than almost about anything I write. People want the truth out there. They don't get tired of hearing it told like it is when it came to what really happened with the league. And I've heard from people from New Orleans who feel jobbed by the officiating. Heard from, Chiefs fans who feel jobbed by the overtime rules. There's a lot of angst about the NFL right now. And I do think, too, big picture-wise, and this is getting probably in the weeds a little bit, but if you look around this week, there have been a couple stories about participation rates in youth teams, leagues. The NFL treats people pretty bad to be the king of the mountain of a sport that, if you look at the roots, there's some signs of trouble down the line. So I just think a league might want to rethink how it treats some of its fans, because at some point, you know, it's hard to be king forever. And there's some signs that say football might not be king forever. And there's also some signs that said it hasn't always treated its fans and its players the best for a league that could eventually be needing some goodwill.
I'm curious with the folks that and I should say this, and I don't mean to embarrass you. I mean this in a good way. You're a very, very intelligent, bright guy. And not a lot surprises you. You kind of, you know, have that keen sense of, as a reporter, you know, knowing what's what and trying to get to the bottom of things. The responses that you have gotten, has there been anybody in particular with the stuff you wrote about Stan and Demoff and the Rams, anything caught your attention that you said, boy, that's hadn't thought about that, or that is a really good look at what's going on here from a reader or even from some of your colleagues in the media?
Well, no, I think I hear stuff all the time, like as you do, about, you know, the things that jump out about, remember when they said this, remember, I mean,
it's unbelievable.
I remember, and this is going to be mentioned in the column, but you and I have talked about, you know, the night that when you found out they were leaving the Rams, and this is an all-timer. you're on the Cardinals caravan, and you go back, you know, months upon months upon months of tweets and start retweeting things Demoff had tweeted to people about not leaving. You know, and I've heard Bernie give great recollections this week on the radio on 101 about his interview with Kroenke. I mean, because and I wasn't here for this, but, you know, obviously I know the story and have heard it over the years, but hearing him revisit that is fun, because he just wore Stan out trying to get an interview. And he talked about, you know, the resistance toward giving that interview. And then finally he got it, and how mad Stan was that Bernie was even asking about this intent, this rumored intention to leave, you know, and how he promptly shot it down. And, you know, it was around that same time that he and Demoff were having their, you know, their romantic talk about the place in Los Angeles that they had found, you know, just the level of lying. And I'll never forget either. I remember, you have to go back in the Post-Dispatch archives and find a column from the late Brian Burwell, when he said, look, you know, people who are saying that this can't happen need to wake up, because it could happen. And, you know, people in LA who know a thing or two, they know that this could happen, and there might be some wheels turning here when it comes to the Rams coming back to Los Angeles. And I'm sure, you know, he was shelled for that opinion, but it wasn't just off the top of his head. It was reported. So there were people who were on this way before I was around, you know, and I think that, you know, those opinions stood the test of time. And two, just the amount of that's kind of what I wanted to hit in that column. It wasn't just that they left. It was the charade. It was the smoke and mirrors. It was Stan Kroenke interviewing Jeff Fisher, asking him about relocating a team, not about winning a Super Bowl. And those things, you know, those things really stand out now when you look at how the seeds were planted for this all along.
If you had the chance as a journalist to sit down with Stan or even Demoff and ask about this situation, what would you want to ask him?
It would be Stan, not Kevin, because Kevin's just an extension of Stan. I mean, he's just a talking mouthpiece. My biggest question for Stan Kroenke, and I don't even know if he knows the answer, would be, what happened to you that made you like this? Because something, I don't know what it is. I don't know him personally. I know the area that he's from. I'm not from very far away from there. And I can't, knowing where I'm from and what matters to people there and what mattered to me growing up, there's not anything more that I could think of wanting to have more than what Stan Kroenke had, in terms of being in a position where you could literally be, you know, the man of the state that you grew up in. Now, some people have different aspirations, and that's okay. I'm not saying that we should all have the same goals. But something happened with him where he views the world in terms of wealth, land, money, and lawsuits won. And that really seems to be all he cares about. And I don't think it's an exaggeration, because if you talk to some people who've done business with him, people that considered him to be a friend, and you talked about how he you know, they might have had an agreement, a disagreement that wound up in the court of law or some sort of setting, a business agreement that turned on its head. How in that moment he just turned from a person, a friend, into a, you know, a mercenary. And it was as if they he didn't know these people. You know, when you see the stuff that he did in Texas, where you go down and buy this ranch and it's massive and it's, I mean, the size of bigger than some states, and you find this little collection of tiny, cheap homes built around a lake that you're probably never going to use. And it's the home, these homes have been rented for, you know, on a year-to-year basis, but for years upon years, families have been raised there and people had retired there, and they're in these little cabins that you can't be moved because they're literally cabins on a lake. They would have no value. It would be more expensive to move them somewhere than to just abandon them. And you kick these people off their land where they have been told they can, you know, where they plan on staying for the rest of their lives. For what reason? To build a rumored hunting lodge on a land so big that you could have put it somewhere else on a different lake? I mean, it's baffling some of the decisions that he makes when it comes to just being a person. And look, we all have warts. We all have flaws. I'm not perfect. I Lord knows I've made mistakes and will make many more. But for a guy who has more money than one could ever count or spend, some of the decisions he makes seem to truly boil down to something like, I don't know what it is he's chasing. And that would be the question I would have for him. I would want to know what it is that happened that shaped his worldview like this.
Yeah, it's so well put. I can't really add to that. I mean, outside of there's many questions I'd want to ask him, but that would be one of them.
That gets all the little questions. I mean, to me, like every question you would ask boils down to, why do you think this way?
Yeah,
I don't know that anybody has ever gotten at that answer, and not for lack of trying. He's very reclusive. He doesn't like to talk. He hardly ever talks. But you know, my other question would be, you know, like I just. You know, yeah, I don't even think there is one. I mean, you know, even the ones I think about boil back to the same thing. And it was like, why do you value what you value, and what happened to make it that way? Because something clearly did it. I don't think it was born into him. And I'm just would be curious as to what fuels him and what drives him.
Man, it's well put.
It'd be a great book.
Oh boy, would it ever? You gotta wonder too with the other owners who, let's face it, it's not like a club that when they line up for a class picture, you'd go, boy, that looks like a lot of fun right there with those guys. you know, I mean, hey, you know, but I'm not here to judge. But I would wonder in that club, you know, what some of those guys are thinking. And again, many of them have made their money the way they've made their money, and that's fine. But you know, within that, and when they're reading some of these articles, in particular, the one down in Texas in that ranch, and what's happened to some of the things here in St. Louis and just how you treat people, you're doing it at what cost, you know, with human beings. Why? And I wonder what those guys think, others in that club. And boy, oh boy, it goes down to the question that you're, I think, posing as to, you know, what made you think like this and what drives you to be like this? And I agree with you. It would be a fascinating question to be answered.
I don't know if we'll ever get the answer. I would genuinely be interested in hearing it or seeing someone get after it. I doubt that I'll be the one who gets that interview. But no, I mean, to me, it's at some point you're so detached from reality. He is so surrounded by people who tell him what he does is smart and good and great that I don't think he has probably anyone who can tell him how bad some of the decisions that he makes look to the average normal person. And maybe he doesn't care. I don't know. Or maybe he truly doesn't know at this point. But it just seems to me like, you know, you got your team in L.A., but I wonder, like, I would not like the idea of not being able to come back to my home state and be well-received. That would bother me to some degree. If I was a man of his impact and his wealth, and, you know, that wouldn't sit right with me. But what do I know? I would rather live in Missouri than Los Angeles anyway, and that probably makes me an idiot to a lot of people. So I'll take that too. I mean, we all have different desires and wants than others, and I get it.
I was thinking about this too, with MLS, you know, and what they're striving to do and make an impact here in the city through soccer. And I was thinking about, you know, with Stan and over $1 million that was there for the taking and a stadium that was there for the taking without the input of the Rams, and the work that Dave Peacock did was just remarkable in a short amount of time, and so many different fronts, and the stadium task force. And, you know, as you said, he could have stayed here and said, hey, this could be the jewel along with Ballpark Village and Busch Stadium to say this is something through sports that we could be proud of to help jumpstart an area. And I'm not saying that that would have been, you know, the end-all be-all, but boy, you just come out and say, look, I'm from here. I'm one of you. I'm hoping that this helps the city, clearly. You've shown me an awful lot. I'm going to show you an awful lot. I'm going to help build a magnificent stadium in conjunction with what you've already done. And I want to be here. I want to be a part of this community. And you do that. And as you know, Ben, being from the state and me from the city, I mean, people, that resonates. That type of message resonates with the fans and citizens here in St. Louis. You'll get that back tenfold. And he bypassed that for more money. And that to me is just, I find that remarkable. I just don't understand that.
Well, it's not remarkable when you know the kind of person he is. I mean, everything he does is boiled down to leverage and the fine print and what can be proven in the court of law. And that's what got them out. I mean, the lease was bad, right? I mean,
lease was terrible. Like, hey, by the way, I get, I mean, people say to me, well, look at what he's done. I mean, he's going to do this with his money. He could double it, triple it. I don't care. That's fine. He's already got a ton of money, but he still would have been here. It still would have been a viable product. It still would have been something that with as much money, public funding he was going to get, that would have been big. So, you know, there's something about legacy. I mean, the legacy is going to be, hey, there's this remarkable stadium he's going to have, right? It's going to be awesome. It's going to be incredible. It's going to be state of the art. And oh, by the way, it's going to be outdated at some point. So, you know, that's the other thing. And then what? So,
I think that's you. I think you hit it on. No, you mentioned the right word. It's legacy. But for I think you and I think about legacy being where we are and what we've done, what we consider to be home, and that's one way of viewing it. And I'm not the one to say that's right or wrong. I think he thinks of his legacy as how much money he makes, how good his business deals are. He doesn't care whether his teams win championships as much as he cares about how many he can have and what kind of assets he can build. He just has a very unique idea of legacy. To him, moving the Rams to Los Angeles, building this stadium that will host Super Bowls, being able to trade wine with LeBron James, that's the kind of legacy that he desires. And in some ways, for a guy who is from this place, is from this state, he seems to have values that don't necessarily reflect with what we would think those values are. And maybe in that way, it was a bad marriage from the start where, Stan Kroenke is a Missourian in that he was born here, but what else can you point to that you would identify as a typical Missourian? And this is the cliched version of the Midwesterner, but he's very much not that. And I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but there was his legacy is not how we would define it and not probably how others would define it, but he is building one. It's just not the one that I think I would want to have at the end of the day. I would love to have the money. Don't get me wrong. Who wouldn't? But there are some other things that matter too, I think. I'm not sure what matters to him other than wealth and winning in terms of legal battles and not on the field of his teams, but just in terms of, scalps on the wall when you're talking about, fights that get into the courtroom or leverage in business. I don't know what else he cares about beyond that, to be honest.
Yeah. Awesome stuff, my man. Thanks. Have a great weekend, and I look forward.
I feel like I'm on a psychiatrist's couch here.
Well, you're like Dr. Phil sometimes for me on these Fridays, you know?
Well, I hope we got everybody stirred up for the and in their feelings headed into the week. Let's end it with a PSA. Make sure you pick the right legacy, people.
Well,
people will remember you one way or the other.
Well, ain't that the truth? You know, it is funny, though. I did think about this, by the way. You know, when we start, we always think, well, we'll hit this topic, that topic, and then it turns into a million different things. But, you know,
right.
I was thinking one of the questions I did want to hear addressed, and I did not see if it was, but, you know, he did turn down public money from the state and from the city. And, you know, we talked about this a little bit, but I wonder if Roger Goodell was asked at all about that. So you do have some stadiums that are coming up in the NFL that are going to be outdated. And as some of these cities will find a task force or find ways to try to get public money and then get it. And if an owner says, well, that's just not going to cut it, and they turn it down, you know, or they look at the St. Louis situation and they say, well, he turned it down. If that sets a precedent, that is a real dangerous line to walk, in my opinion. So I wonder if that was ever asked to him or if he's addressed that publicly. I have not seen that. If he's going to be, quote unquote, protecting that really great shield that they love to throw out there.
Well, I would warn every regional size, you know, city that's similar to St. Louis's market, that if you ever get to a spot where you feel like, you know, you have to come up with something to help your team, I would take forward the example set here in St. Louis and push back against that notion and say that your league has a precedent of taking an area that is fighting to keep its team and basically saying, you know, if you make good, you know, good faith effort to come up with a solution, then we will be on your side, and completely destroying that statement in a vote. And, you know, even to the point where the initial vote did not give St. Louis the clearance to move, the doors shut, the balance went secret, and a couple influential owners, one being Jerry Jones, worked the room until they got what they wanted. So now that's probably a very hard point to stick to when you're, you know, trying to keep from losing your team. Things get emotional and regions, areas want to react and keep their team. But, you know, St. Louis will not be the last place that is put through this. It will not be the last place that's used as, you know, that's used as leverage for, you know, give us more money or we'll consider leaving. But I think cities would be really smart to hold this up as an example and say, why would we work to come up with a plan when you've proven that if the place is more desirable, that you'll leave no matter what? And the NFL should have to answer that question. Will it answer it? Probably not. But I do think it would be smart for cities to ask if they're being leveraged into trying to fork over more money for a stadium or renovation.
By the way, you're buying a new house, correct?
So correct.
We're talking about, you know, public funding. I'm assuming you didn't ask for public funding for your purchase of your new home.
No. Asking for a raise for my appearances on Scoops with Danny Mac.
Well, we can talk about that off the air. However, you know, Ryan Kelly could help you, but that's also a fine sponsor on Scoops with Danny Mac. You need to talk to Ryan Kelly, the home loan expert. Just saying.
I know Ryan.
Well, you pick up the phone and call him.
I will.
Good. I'll talk to you next week.
Okay, buddy. I'll see you.